Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of horror, later on from Suspense from 1950. But first, it's The Weird Circle with a broadcast called The Warning, a syndicated episode from 1944.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale. The Warning.
Hester, this is a warning. Your husband Charles must not go to the house of Waverly, for there awaits death and sorrow.
Oh, Charles!
Hester, what on earth?
Oh, Charles, thank heaven you're still here.
But what's the matter? What happened?
I don't know. It was a voice. I was lying here in bed, half asleep. When the clock began striking midnight, a voice spoke to me. Oh, Charles, what was it? It sounded like my brother Tom.
Oh, my darling, it was only a dream, and it frightened you, that's all.
Oh, but the voice said, oh, Charles, don't leave Swansea.
Why, Hester, you're almost hysterical.
But this was a warning. He said that you, Charles, must not go to the house of Waverly. Waverly, what house is that?
Well, it isn't one of our properties, at least.
Charles, that note, that invitation from John Galton, he lives at a place called Waverly.
That's right, now that you mention it.
And the voice said that Waverly is death and sorrow. It was my brother Tom, I know it was. And he's warning us. Charles, don't go tonight. Promise me you won't go now.
But darling, the reason I'm going is to find out what happened to your brother. It's after midnight already. I should have gone an hour ago.
My brother's dead. I know it now. Secretly, you know it, too.
Yes. Well, somehow we would have heard where he is. A man like Tom just doesn't disappear.
Oh, Charles, I'm frightened. When you go, I'll be here alone and afraid for you.
No, Hester, I'll be all right.
We thought Tom would be all right, too, when he went to collect the rents. It's so far away, Charles.
Oh, 50 miles? That isn't far.
Then promise me you won't go to John Galton's, to this Waverly, promise.
All right, Hester. But after all, John's an old friend, a schoolmate, in fact. I promise, though. Now, you feel better?
A little, I suppose.
Then go to sleep. And I'll also promise to be back safe and sound within a fortnight. There, a kiss for the prettiest wife in Swansea. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Charles.
Goodbye, darling.
Aye, sir. I remember him well, Mr. Hargreaves. Thomas Charcot, he said his name was. You say he's your wife's brother? Aye. He came to the farm here about a year ago, asked after all of us, and then went on to the manor house to collect the rent monies. You say he never returned to Swansea?
I am afraid not, my man. You see, my wife and I were away on a long honeymoon, and we didn't know of her brother's disappearance until we came back.
Highwayman, most probably. I'm sorry to hear of it.
Well, thanks for your help, anyhow. I'll be on my way. I want to get to the manor house by nightfall. Get up there. See you about this time next year.
Aye, sir. Thank you, Mr. Hargreaves. Good luck to you.
Well, sir, I do recollect him. Yes, sir, I do. Fine young chap he was. Stopped here at the inn about this time of night, about 10 o'clock, and took my best room. Then off he went the next morning, chipper as the dawn.
Well, I left Swansea 2 days ago, and I have traced him this far. It's the last stop. North of here is Sir Granville's estates.
By George, I do recollect something the young chap said, now that you bring him to mind, Mr. Hargreaves.
Well, what is it, Hobbs?
Why, he had an invitation to visit some friend or other, he did, sir. Said he was off for a bit of a holiday before going back to Swansea.
Invitation? From whom?
Well, that he didn't say, sir. By George.
What is it, Hobbs?
That's a funny thing. Now I recollect it. Didn't think much about it at the time.
What?
Your Mr. Charcot asked after the way to get there, he did. I recollect it particularly because Elsie, my dear dead wife, sir, God bless her soul, Elsie was born a few miles from there.
From where?
A great big house, empty for as long as I can remember. Never thought anyone lived there at all. Waverly it is. That's it. Name of Waverly.
Waverly.
Suppose you might inquire. Find out where he went from there.
Yes. You're right, Hobbs.
Gillette was murdered somewhere on the monies?
I don't know, but I intend to find out. Thanks for all you've said. It's been of great help. Now, I think I'll go to bed.
Oh, of course, of course. The first floor room's quite ready. I'll take your portmanteau. This way, Mr. Hargreaves. Mr. Hargreaves, sir. Mr. Hargreaves.
What is it, Hobbs?
I'm sorry to wake you, sir, but there's a lady here. Says she's Mrs. Hargreaves.
Of course I am. Charles, it's Hester.
Hester? For heaven's sakes, what are you doing here?
I had to come, Charles, after what's happened. I couldn't stay at Swansea another minute.
Will there be anything you want, sir?
Innkeeper, tell the driver I shan't need him any longer. He might want to stay the night here. The sky is most threatening.
I'll see to him, ma'am. Good night.
Whatever happened to make you come all the way from Swansea?
Oh, Charles, I was so worried. You all right?
Of course. Hester, what's the matter, my darling? You look pale and tired. Here, let me light another candle.
Charles, last night at midnight, the voice spoke to me again.
Is that all?
Is that all? Charles, how can I make you understand? I've been most frightened to death. It's not what you think. It's not a dream.
Well, what did the voice say?
It gave another warning. It said it could only appear to me while the clock struck midnight. And then it said that you were in danger. And that if you went to that place, Waverley, the name is, you'd surely die. Oh, Charles, please, please, for my sake, heed the warning.
Is that why you came, then, to tell me this?
I had to. Last night I lay awake for hours, wondering if you'd kept your promise not to go to John Galton's. And then suddenly I couldn't bear it any longer. I hired a carriage and followed you.
Hester, this is mad. I don't understand it. You say this voice...
Tom, Charles. His ghost. Don't you think I'd recognize my own brother's voice? Oh, my darling. I don't understand it either. All I know is...
Hester, Tom had an invitation to visit John Galton.
Oh?
He left the inn here at dawn, I'm told, and went on, presumably, to Waverley. I made inquiries on the road. The place is somewhere beyond the White Forest. It can't be far.
Charles.
I'm going there, Hester. If Tom's a prisoner, if he's been murdered...
Charles, no, you mustn't. I won't hear of it. I won't let you go.
Nevertheless, I'm going.
But Tom is dead. I know he is. You can't help him now. And twice he's warned us, don't you see? For my sake, leave this thing alone. It's beyond our understanding, and no good can come of it. It's midnight. Charles! Charles, the terrace windows!
The wind. Blown out the candles. Wait, I'll close
it. No! Oh! Charles, look!
Hester, what is it?
It's the ghost of Tom, taking form in the mist. There in the wind.
Charles and Hester Hargreaves, this is the third, the last warning. Do not travel to Waverley, for there awaits everlasting death. Beware of John Galton. Go back to Swansea. Go back. Go back tonight.
The ghost. It's disappeared.
Close the window, Charles, quickly.
There. Here, I'll light the candles again.
Now, you've heard the warning yourself. Now you've seen the ghost, you know what I meant.
Yes. And there was pain on his misty face. And a dagger in his heart.
Charles, if you love me, take me back to Swansea now. I'll never ask anything else of you so long as we live. If you'll only take me back tonight.
But Hester, there's Tom's murder to avenge.
Oh, what can that matter now? It's done. And he warns us to leave us alone. Charles, please, heed this warning. Take me back.
But I don't understand all this, Hester.
Please, please, Charles, take me home.
All right. I'll take you home.
Hester, this is a crazy thing to do, going out in the night like this. I can barely see the road.
But we're on our way, Charles. That's all that matters.
If we aren't drowned in a deluge before we get there, we'll be lucky. I've hidden the gold in a box under the baggage, Hester.
Charles, there's something I want to tell you. Something you never knew.
What's that?
It's John Galton I'm afraid of. I never told you before, but I've always been afraid of him.
Oh, Hester, why?
Because long before we were married, he was terribly in love with me. I didn't know it myself until one day he asked me to marry him.
Oh, what's frightening about that?
It was his manner when I said no. He turned pale and there were tears in his eyes, and he said, I'll find a way, Hester. Someday you will be Mrs. Galton.
What happened then?
Nothing. Except that for months I suspected him of watching me. Now and again I'd catch a glimpse of him in a crowd. And once I saw him waiting near my father's house. After that, I never saw him again.
Nor have I, since we left school. Hester, do you suppose... Oh, it's impossible that he could...
Charles, look. There's someone on the road.
He's hailing us to stop.
Charles, no, don't.
Get off the road there, man. Move to one side.
Look out, we'll hit him. Charles, stop.
What's the idea, man? He want to be run over?
He's coming toward... Oh!
Why, George. Hester. There's a dagger in his heart.
He's dead. He's a dead man. Charles, drive on.
Come on, get up there. Get up.
Charles, what's the matter? Why have you stopped?
Because there's no use going on like this. The rain, I can't even see the road.
And this forest. I don't remember this forest at all.
I don't either. I've never been here before, Hester.
You mean you don't know where we are, Charles?
Oh, we'll find our way out. We'd better stay here till daybreak.
No, let's go on. There must be a farmhouse nearby, somebody to tell us the right road. Charles, let's go on.
I suppose you're right. The road leads somewhere. Get up.
Hester, is that a light yonder, through the trees?
Where? Oh, Charles, it is.
Thank heaven, at least we'll find shelter. Here, Hester. Stand under the eaves out of the rain.
Oh, I'm all right. There's the knocker there, Charles.
All right.
Hello? Hello? Will you let us in? Hello in there.
Good evening, sir. My wife and I...
Charles.
Good evening, my friends.
John Galton.
I've been expecting you. Welcome to the House of Waverly. Come in, my friends, in here before the fire. It will take the chill of the rain and the night from your bones. Spot of wine?
No, thank you, John. You say you were expecting us?
Yes, I was, Charles. Hester, come and sit by the fire. Your frock is damp, I'm afraid.
How did you know we would come, John?
Because it was the last thing in the world you wanted to do.
I think you expected only me. We met one of your men on the road.
Oh, yes. I sent him out to make sure you were lost. He's a frightening fellow. I trust the sight of him didn't alarm you too much, Hester.
He's a dead man. There was a dagger in his heart.
Yes. A most disconcerting thing.
What do you want with us?
Well, you're my old friends, and this is my house. I would like you to enjoy its hospitality.
Then, because we are old friends, John, let us go. I'm afraid here, that man...
Oh, he won't harm you, my dear, and I wouldn't hear if you're leaving. Jacob! Jacob will show you to one of the sitting rooms upstairs, Hester. There's a fire there.
Charles! Look in the doorway.
Great Scott! A walking corpse!
With a dagger in his heart.
Send him away, please! Send him away!
Oh, I see our Hester's frightened. Well, she'll grow accustomed to my servants soon. Jacob! Go back! There now. He's gone.
John Galton, what kind of a devil are you? What do you want of us? This thing's gone too far.
Oh, I see you mistrust me. Or maybe your impatience suggests mistrust. In any case, I gladly tell you, Charles. May I suggest the library? It's just yonder, beyond those doors. There we'll be alone.
And leave Hester here with this place full of devilish monsters?
Oh, I assure you she's entirely safe. Will you please forgive us a few minutes' neglect, Hester?
Well, if it's necessary, but I do...
We shan't be long. Come, Charles.
I want to get to the bottom of this thing, Hester. It'll only be a moment. Then we'll be quite ready to go home.
All right, Charles, but do hurry back.
I promise. John, lead the way.
Here.
Come and sit in the light of the fire, Charles. There's some excellent wine on the table.
No, thank you.
As you say, it's my custom to offer a man a glass of wine before he dies.
Then you did kill Tom Chockett.
He sat there sipping his claret, unsuspecting, even unafraid. No, I did not kill him.
You mean he's still alive? He's here?
No, he's dead. But his body is here. It serves me well, even as yours will.
I knew Tom was robbed and murdered to cover it up, but I had no idea it was you. What's happened to make you like this?
The answer's easy. Two things, Charles. Love and the consuming desire to kill. They are strangely akin.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hester. I've been in love with her for a long, long time.
What's that got to do with it?
She told me once that she couldn't marry me because I wasn't able to give her everything she required for happiness. I was insanely jealous of everyone she knew, even the places she went. Then, quite suddenly, I saw a way out.
What was that?
My aunt had died. She was penniless. But she did leave me Waverly. All that was left of the Galtons' great name. Suddenly I realized how well it would serve me. So I came here to live alone. I waited, knowing the chance would come. And it did. One night in a blinding storm.
I am beginning to see what you mean.
Yes. A merchant traveling through the forest road lost his way in the storm. He came to Waverly and I invited him in. He drank too much wine. The knife was handy. I couldn't resist the simple thrust at his heart. And then the gold he carried was mine. Do you know? Before he died, the most extraordinary thing of all happened.
Well, what was it?
He rose up stiffly from his chair and clung to the mantel. Somehow his fingers touched the stone that moved, and then he fell heavily upon the earth. But the compartment was open, and inside it I could see the silver ring shining in the candlelight.
Ring?
Yes. A large ring, almost as large as a bracelet. I took it out and lettered in silver above it was a rhyme. Listen. These magic words, at midnight read, make murdered men the living dead. You know, even as I spoke, the dead man moved. Slowly he got to his feet, and he stood there waiting. I was shaken and cold with fear until I began to know what it meant.
The ring, you mean?
Yes, the magic ring. For centuries it had lain hidden in the chimney piece. Legend said it was given to one of the first Galtons nearly 5 centuries ago by a gypsy in return for her life. With it, Charles Hargreaves, I'm the most powerful man in the world. With it, the dead are at my command and the living fear me. It gives me everything in the world I want.
It does not give you the right to kill.
It gives me the power to control even death itself. Jacob! William!
What are you going to do?
Our talk is done, Charles. See? See these two men, Charles? They are my slaves. Two men who are dead and yet alive. Jacob! William! See this man!
Stay back from me. Stay back!
Strong, but... Charles. It will be useless to resist.
Let go of me. You.
It
let
is
go.
Useless, my friend, to struggle. The hands are like ours. Now you see how powerful the magic ring is. Only once have I killed a man, the first. And since then, the murdered have murdered at my bidding.
I'll give you my gold if that's what you want, John. I'll give it to you gladly.
But the gold is useless stuff, my friend. Don't you see? I have enough. It is your death I want, Charles. And then your body to serve me, even as these do.
You're a devil.
Once you are gone, thought that you will creep from Hester's heart and she'll forget.
She'll not forget. Your magic is lost in the living. Do you think she can love you just for the asking?
The power of my love is strong enough to win her to me. But I'll grant you this grace, Charles. A last grace. I'll allow you to see her again before you die. Jacob! Hold him here. Till the time comes.
Where are you going?
To offer Hester the world if she wants it. To win her. Tell her at last she is mine.
John, where is Charles? What have you done to him?
He'll be here in a minute or two, Hester. Now, there's no need to be afraid. You've always been a little frightened of me, I think.
Yes, I've never understood you, John. A woman's always afraid of anything she doesn't understand.
My dear, fear is passing. And this will go, believe me.
I do believe you. But everything here is so strange.
We'll make it right, Hester. What can I do to make it right? Anything you say, I'll do it gladly.
Why, thank you, John. Really, I should be ashamed of myself. After all, what is there to be afraid of? You see, already I'm beginning to feel at home.
You're still as beautiful as ever. Still the Hester I knew years ago.
Why, do any of us ever change very much?
I've changed. But the change was for you. All for you. Do you like me as I am, Hester?
Why, we were friends, John. We were young together. Remember how you used to leave those mysterious notes in the hollow tree near the fountain?
I remember your father's rich carriages, your beautiful gowns, and how ashamed I was of my poor looks and my clothes.
Well, no longer, John. Since then, you've come a long way in the world.
Then it pleases you. Oh, how glad I am. This house, it's a luxurious house, Hester, almost worthy of your beauty. Does Waverly please you, too?
Why, it's a lovely house, John. I was just thinking, though.
What, my dear?
Oh, I was thinking how ably it could use a woman's touch. You men, when you live alone, you like everything drab and colorless. All of you need someone to take care of you, to fuss over you a little, to keep your clothes neat and keep your shirt collars buttoned. Here, John, let me fasten it for you.
Hester, my darling.
Is that the keepsake you wear around your neck, John?
It's only a silver ring. Hester, what have you done? Give it back to me.
Now I have your magic ring, John Galton.
Hester, give it back.
I'm not afraid of you. Now your powers are gone, and your murdered men will have to answer to my command.
You listened. You heard everything I told you.
Do you think I'd sit meekly by the fire while you arranged to kill my husband? I was outside the door, even when those two monsters came to hold him fast.
Hester, I beg of you, please give it back.
John Galton, you killed my brother, who came here as a friend. You murdered my brother, Tom. Tom!
With the Tom. Hands, I've killed only one man, Hester. The second time is easier. And to kill one I love would be easier still. Give me back the ring.
Tom! Oh, Tom. You've come.
For months I've waited in torment for such a night as this, John Galton. As a ghost, I could never harm you. But now your strength is gone with the ring.
Don't come near me! Stay there! Stay back!
I have been carrying this dagger in my heart for one reason. To raise it above your chest and set it deep in your heart.
Hester! Hester, stop him!
Tom. Tommy's running away out the terrace doors.
He cannot escape. The magic of the ring you hold is too great. The ring. For my sake, Hester, study the ring. It has more power than you know.
Tom! Tom, come back! Let him go! Oh, Tom, come back! Come back! Charles! Charles, help me!
Hester! Let me go, you demons! Let me go!
Charles! Charles!
Hester!
Let go of him, you fiends! Jacob, William, let him go!
Hester, what is this? They obeyed you. They're gone.
I have the magic ring, Charles. I took it from John. Quick! Tom will murder him. Help me stop him quickly.
Where did they go?
Out there. Out the terrace doors.
Come along. I heard you calling after Tom, but I couldn't get away from those devils.
Tom took the knife from his heart, and John fled. Tom wouldn't obey me, Charles. Oh, there was such revenge in his dead eyes.
Here, the terrace doors. Look, the storm's over. Daylight's coming. Where did they go?
Oh, Charles. Oh, we're too late.
Yes, yonder on the terrace. He's plunged the knife in John's heart. Look at Tom, how still he stands.
Tom said, for his sake, to study the ring. Look, Charles, the inscription here. These magic words...
Don't read them. They bring back the dead.
Well, what did he mean?
Look, there, on the inside. You see? There's something written in there.
Another inscription. Here, let me hold it up to the light. Oh, here it is. At break of day... This magic key makes dust of flesh, sets phantoms free.
Hester, look. Tom's body. It crumbled. It crumbled into dust.
The words, the magic ring.
Now the murdered men are prisoners no longer. Their bodies have sunk into dust. Give me the ring.
Oh, what a terrible charm it is. We must destroy the ring, Charles.
You're right, Hester. It must be destroyed, so it can never harm anyone again. We'll take the ring and throw it into the sea.
time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the story, The Warning. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from 1944, penned by R.P. Gillies, who was known for his 19th century poems and short stories. This is an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, with a program written by Billy Idelson. You might recognize that name if you were a fan of Vic and Sade. He played the adopted son, Rush, on that series for many years, and this would be the only radio script on record he contributed to a major network program. It's called The Man in the Room and was heard on CBS on May 11, 1950.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Mr. John Lund in The Man in the Room, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear. And now, with The Man in the Room and the performance of John Lund, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
When I was 10, I first read Edgar Allan Poe's story of the miraculous room. The room whose terrible walls closed slowly in upon their prisoner made a deep impression upon me. My most persistent nightmare was that I was the poor devil in the story. I didn't know then that he had been impressed by it too, and that someday I would actually be the man in the room. Excuse me, can you tell me what floor Miss Markham is on?
Miss Markham, what do you want with her?
Why, I want her to do some work for me. She does typing, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. Third floor. Step in.
Thank you.
You're a writer?
Yes.
What do you write?
Stories, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Sell them?
Occasionally.
Mm-hmm. She's down at the end of the hall where you see the door open.
Thank you very much.
Oh, come in, please.
Thank you. Miss Markham?
That's right. What can I do for you?
I saw your ad in the paper. I thought perhaps you could do some work for me.
Oh, yes, of course. What is it? Typing? Mimeographing?
Typing. Manuscript.
You're a writer?
Yes.
Oh, would you shut the door, please?
Oh, yes, of course.
Thank you. You'll find that I do absolutely perfect work and at the most reasonable rates. I've had many years of experience, although not in this city. I just recently moved here. Will you have much for me to do?
Well, that depends. Frankly, Miss Markham, the price is a factor with me. You see, I'm a freelance writer, and at best, that's a precarious occupation.
I see. Well, is 30 cents a page too much?
Why?
25.
I was about to say that 30 seems extremely reasonable.
Well, I've already said 25, so we'll leave it at that.
You're very kind.
Not at all. Excuse me, please.
Was that the elevator man running down the hall?
Well, no, I didn't see anyone. It's been a lovely day, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
I think the weather is so perfect here. I know I'm going to love this city. It's so difficult coming to a new place and trying to establish oneself, especially so late in life. But I think things are going to work out fine.
I hope so.
Would you like to leave your manuscript now?
Yes, here it is.
Oh, thank you. Yes, 40 pages. I'll have that ready for you day after tomorrow.
Oh, that'll be fine. I'll come back and pick it up then. I left the office and rang for the elevator. The old man who ran it didn't speak to me on the way down. But I stood in the back of the car and looked him over carefully. He was a funny little old duck. Almost dwarf-sized, with shoulders so rounded he was nearly humpbacked. I was sure he was the one who had been listening at the door upstairs. But, after all, it was none of my affair. 2 days later, I returned to the old office building to pick up my manuscript.
You come to pick up your typing?
Yes.
Here it is. She left it for you.
Oh. Well, I've got to go up anyway. I have some more work for Miss Markham.
I'll take it. She don't want to be disturbed.
Well,
Just give it here.
All right. I gave him the manuscript and left. Several days later, when I returned, he had the completed work ready for me, down on the first floor. That's the way it went on the other occasions when I had typing for Miss Markham to do. The old man took it from me downstairs and had it ready for me when I returned. There was always a reason for me not to go upstairs. Miss Markham was working and didn't want to be disturbed. Or she just left for lunch. Or she wasn't down that day because of illness. One day, when I came to pick up some material, the elevator was not down on the first floor, and my curiosity got the better of me. Instead of ringing, I took the stairs and walked up to the third floor.
Oh, it's you.
Where's Miss Markham?
She ain't here. You can see she ain't.
Yes. Are you typing?
Sure. I help her out sometimes. She's sick today.
Oh, I see.
I just finished your story.
That's fine.
It won't sell, though.
What?
I say it won't sell. It's clumsy.
Oh, you think so?
Yes. It's all hodgepodge. You write too fast.
Well, I'm sorry you don't like it, but if you'll just put it together, I'll send it off anyway.
All right. But it won't sell.
That night at home, I'd been working for hours on a plot for a mystery story and was having absolutely no luck. I simply couldn't concentrate. Then I had a thought. How would it be to use Miss Markham and the elevator man as a basis for a story? Just take the situation as it stood now and fabricate the rest of the plot from there. Let's see. The old man could have murdered her and hidden the body. Possibly he'd done it immediately after I'd seen her last and she'd been dead all this time. I even made up a fine name for the elevator man. I called him Dracklin. But for the life of me, I couldn't build a story. Why had he killed her? What had he done with the body? The plot wouldn't move. And yet somehow I couldn't discard it and try another. I knew that I was stuck with it until I worked it out. Well, how about the reality? What had happened to Miss Markham? Why hadn't I seen her for over 2 weeks? The only thing to do, I decided, was to find out more about the real situation. Perhaps I could evolve something from that.
Hello?
Hello, George? Bert.
Oh, how are you, Bertie, old boy?
Fine. Listen, George, who does your typing?
My typing? Why, Harrison Lewis.
Oh, yes, at 50 cents a page. I forgot you were rich.
Why?
Well, I thought perhaps you'd seen the same ad in the paper that I did. A Miss Markham. She's been doing some work for me.
Markham? No, I didn't see it. Well, why? Is she any good?
Oh, yes. She's very good.
Well, what does she charge?
30 cents a page.
Hey, that is cheap. Maybe I'll switch. Where's she located?
202 West Olive. Why don't you go up and see her anyway? Let me know what she says.
All right. I'll go in the morning.
Fine. Goodbye, George. The next morning, I called information and got Miss Markham's office number. It was not yet listed in the directory. I called the number, somehow knowing there would be no answer.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Miss Markham?
Yes?
Well, this is Mr. Freeland. I heard you were ill yesterday. Just thought I'd call and see how you were.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you very much. I'm feeling much better today.
Oh, I'm glad. I expect to have some more work for you at the end of the week.
All right. Just bring it in.
I will. And, oh, yes, Miss Markham, I haven't received a bill from you yet. Would you send one soon?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Goodbye, Miss Markham.
Goodbye.
thinking, well, there goes my plot into a cocked hat. I realized then that I had begun to believe something had happened to Miss Markham. Talked myself into it, I guess. Confused the fiction with the reality. But just because she was alive and well, that was no reason why I couldn't still build a good story from the same idea. Now, let's see. Gracklin had killed Miss Markham and hidden the body. But when I called up, she answered. No, I couldn't use that. But wait a minute. Why couldn't I? Why, certainly, there was the twist. Sure, Gracklin gets another woman to impersonate Miss Markham. The only ones he'd have to worry about would be the people who had seen the first Miss Markham. Well, that's the way my story would go anyway. I sat down to my typewriter and made it sing for a couple of hours. The story was coming along fine. Only thing I needed was some background on Gracklin. Well, nothing like the source. At about 4:30 that afternoon, I was down on West Olive Street near the 202 building. At about 5, Gracklin came out and started up the street. He got on a bus, so I looked around for a cab. Cabby, you taken?
Nah, hop in.
Good. Listen, follow that bus, but not too close. I'll tell you when to stop.
Okay.
He stayed on that bus all the way to the end of the line. I got out of the cab about a block before the final bus stop and saw the old man get off. It was almost prairie here. Large vacant lots and only a few scattered houses. He entered one of them. After about 20 minutes, when it was getting dark, I walked slowly up to the place. There was a light around in back. I went quietly along the side of the house to the window. I looked in. There sat Gracklin, bent over a table, writing with a quill pen. But it was the room that surprised me. The walls were filled from floor to ceiling with books. Heavy, scholarly book. And then I saw it. On a smaller table against the wall stood her picture. She was younger in the photo and prettier, but it was unmistakably she. Miss Markham. Next morning's mail was her bill, but there was a mistake. She charged me 40 cents a page. So I put on my coat and started downtown. As I walked up Olive Street, I wondered if Gracklin would let me up to see Miss Markham. If it were in my story, he couldn't, because I'd immediately recognize her as another woman. 3, please.
Watch your step.
Miss Markham is in today?
Yep.
You know, I haven't seen her for some time. She's always been out or sick or something.
That's so?
Certainly it's so. You were the one who kept telling me.
Oh. Well, I can't remember everybody who comes in here.
Oh, I shouldn't think it'd be too hard. I'll bet not over 10 people a day come in here. This is the most deserted office building I've ever seen.
Well, sometimes it is a little quiet. You know where it is?
Yes. Miss Markham. You are Miss Markham.
Yes, of course. What?
Oh, no reason. I'm a little confused. Been writing too much lately, I guess.
Oh.
Well, the reason I came down is because of your bill.
There's a mistake.
But don't you remember you said you were going to charge me 25 cents a page? But your bill says 40.
Oh, yes, I do remember now. That's right, 25. The error is mine. I'll change it. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I wasn't worried about it. If you'd like to refigure it, I can leave you a check right now.
Do you possibly have the cash?
Well, let's see. Yes, I think I do. Would you prefer that?
If you don't mind.
I paid the bill and went home. Back to my story. My story that had turned out to be pure fiction after all. Miss Markham was alive and well and back in her office, looking just as she had the first time I saw her. Well, I had used all of the real situation I could, and from now on I was operating on pure imagination. Let's see. Hey, wait a minute. Just because she looks the same doesn't mean she's the same woman. She was a twin, see? The first Miss Markham's twin sister. And Gracklin was, their brother. Why had he killed the first Miss Markham? Well, for money, her life savings. That was always a good motive. And the twin sister was in on it and would split with him. Fine. I rattled off the story and the next morning brought it in to be typed.
Good morning, Mr. Freeland.
Good morning, Miss Markham. Got another story for you.
Oh? Well, I'm not sure that I can start on anything right now. I'm closing up the office, you know.
Oh?
Oh, yes. This climate doesn't agree with me at all. As a matter of fact, I never did like city life.
You've evidently changed your mind about things.
I beg your pardon?
Remember the first day you came up here? You were telling me how well you liked our city and the weather?
Oh, yes. Well, you can always depend on a woman, can't you?
Yeah, I guess so. I really wish you could finish this story for me. It's not very long.
Oh?
Only about 28 pages.
I see. Well, perhaps I can rush it out. I sort of feel that I owe you something anyway.
Why?
For being so nice about that mistake I made on your bill.
Oh, that was nothing.
Well, leave the manuscript here and I'll try to have it done by tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow's my last day. Come in about 2:00.
Right. And thanks a lot, Miss Markham. The next day was Saturday. And if the building had seemed deserted on other days, it had really been a beehive compared to 2:00 on Saturday afternoon. Now it was a morgue. When I entered Miss Markham's office, she was standing there holding a sheaf of papers.
Mr. Freeland, where did you ever get the idea for that story?
Oh, well, I hope it didn't disturb you, but I was desperate for a plot, and I guess I just let my imagination run wild.
I see. Well, I'll just put it in an envelope.
Thank you. And I'll pay you now, because I probably won't see you again.
That's right. You probably won't. Well, I guess I'll just say goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Markham, and good luck.
Thank you. And the same to you.
Grackman was waiting for me there on the third floor. He had probably just stayed there while I was in the office. I got in the elevator, and he closed the door.
Get your story, Mr. Freeland?
Huh? Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
Not a bad story. Miss Markham, let me read it.
Oh?
But it needs rewriting.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. Like I told you before, Mr. Freeland, you write too fast. You aren't careful enough with the reality.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, now that part about hiding the body in the elevator shaft, for instance. You almost had a good thing there. But I could tell you've never been in an elevator shaft. Have you?
Why, no. You've passed the first floor.
Let's go down a bit. I'd like to show you something. This is the basement.
Yes. Yes, I see.
You notice how the air gets closer as you go down? It's little touches like that that make a story real.
Yeah.
Sub-basement. Mr. Freeland, would you like to see what an elevator shaft looks like?
Well, I...
Come on, it's very interesting, especially for a writer.
All right.
Fine, follow me. Now, we'll just go down these stairs on your left. There's only a few of them, but they're kind of dark. Be careful.
I will.
Wouldn't want you to fall. Now, we go through this little steel door. To you, Mr. Freeland.
Thank you.
I see. This is what the bottom of an elevator shaft looks like.
Yes, yes, it is interesting.
You can make all kinds of noise down here and no one would know.
Well.
Now, about your story. You had me, I mean Gracklin, bury the woman in the floor of the shaft. Now, that would never do.
No.
No. If you dug a grave down here, the inspector would find it in a minute.
Oh.
Yes. The inspector's very sharp. Very sharp. But in the wall.
The wall?
Yes. See those bricks? Now, if I go to exactly the right place, look, I can pull several of them right out. And after I've got all the loose ones out, there's a regular cavity been dug out behind them. Come here. Look for yourself.
Miss Mark!
Yes. See how snugly she fits in there? I spent a long time digging that hole.
She's dead. You killed her.
Yes. Didn't you really know? I just put these bricks back now. You had some of the things quite right. The woman upstairs is Millie, her twin sister. This one's name is Dorothy. I married Dorothy, but I should have married Millie. You see, Mr. Freeland, I am a writer, too. More than a writer, a poet. But I didn't sell anything, and Dorothy lost faith in me. She types stories for hacks like yourself, while I had to turn to running an elevator. She caused me to lose faith in myself. Finally, Dorothy left me and came here. I followed her and got a job in the same building. At last, I did what I'd wanted to do for years. I killed her. When I told Millie, she said I'd done quite right, and she came here to help me.
You're insane.
No, Mr. Freeland. I am a poet.
I'm getting out of here.
No, I don't think you are, Mr. Freeland. Are you surprised how strong I am? I've done many things in my time, even if it waits in a circus.
You madman.
No, don't try to get up, Mr. Freeland, or I'll just have to knock you down again. You see, I've got something quite interesting in store for you. You remember Edgar Allan Poe's wonderful story about the man in the room that got smaller and smaller until it would crush the life out of him?
What are you talking about?
Well, Mr. Freeland, I have such a room. You're in it now. The walls won't move, but the ceiling will. Look above you. Most elevators won't go all the way to the bottom of the shaft, but this one will. I fixed it.
Get out of my way, you lunatic!
I warned you, Mr. Freeland!
He hit me a crushing blow, and I dropped to the ground, stunned.
And you were wrong on my name. It's Al Jones.
Then he jumped out of the door and slammed it shut. I staggered to it, but there was no knob or latch of any kind on the inside. It was smooth and flush with the wall. I heard his footsteps running up the stairs, and I heard them above me, in the elevator. Then came a sound that drove me to panic. Racklin, stop! You'll never get away with two murders! You'll go to the electric chair! Racklin! Listen! I won't tell anybody about Miss Parkham. I'll tear up the story! Racklin! I sank to my knees. Still it came on. Then I fell flat on my face. And still it came, closer and closer. Only inches away now. Desperately, I flung out my arms to flatten myself close to the ground. And my hands touched the bricks of the wall. Found one of the loose ones. Without knowing what I was doing, I clawed at the loose brick and pulled it out a little. Then, miraculously, the elevator hung suspended. The side of it caught on the brick. But I knew it wouldn't be stopped for long. Already the side of the elevator was grinding into the brick, and in a moment it would break it and come pressing down upon me like an ant. But then, I heard a new sound. The elevator stopped crushing into the brick now and hung motionless. He definitely shut off the power. He was trying to make up his mind what to do. Suddenly, the elevator lifted. I saw it going up and up, away from me. And then, I don't remember. I must have fainted. The next thing I knew, two policemen were holding me up, asking me questions. I told them something of what had happened. And then I asked him about the elevator man.
Oh, him? Well, we sent him off in the wagon. It was a funny thing. You see, there was this guy from some publisher, I think he was, came here to tell this elevator guy they'd won some big poetry contest. Well, this fellow from the publisher waited around upstairs and finally started pressing the buzzer. When the elevator came up, the old man jumped out, knocked the publisher guy down, and then went running out into the street. That's when we got him. After we sent him off, we came back to investigate. We found you.
Really? Really?
Well, that's about all there was to it. Except that old Bracklin really was a pretty good writer, I guess. Because I made the changes he suggested. And you know what? I sold the story.
Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. John Lund.
Hello. Got another poem for you.
Okay.
Harlow Wilcox, the car owner's delight, awoke one night from a deep dream of...
Autolite. But let's be more specific, Hap. I dreamed that every car in America was equipped with world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs.
And you know, spark plugs are only one of more than 400 products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 plants coast to coast. These include complete electrical systems used as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next Thursday for Suspense, our star will be Miss Claire Trevor. The play is called Angel Face, and it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. The Man in the Room is an original play written for radio by William Idelson and Mary Castle. John Lund is currently being co-starred with Barbara Stanwyck in the Paramount picture No Man of Her Own. In the coming weeks, you will hear such stars as Charles Boyer, Edward G. Robinson, Jack Carson, and Dennis O'Keefe. And don't forget, next Thursday, same time, Autolite will present Suspense, starring Claire Trevor.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 11th, 1950 on CBS. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.